Welcome to the Uncomfortable Truth podcast, hosted by the rock star of consulting, Alan Weiss. Be prepared to have your beliefs challenged and your behaviors questioned.
Welcome back to the Uncomfortable Truth. This episode's on control. Now, there are things you can control, and there are things you can't completely control, but you can influence. And then there are things that you can neither control nor influence. All right, is that simple enough? So I want you to picture yourself meeting a prospect. And I want you to think of three things you can absolutely control, three things you can't control but can influence, and three things that you have no control or influence over. I'm going to give you 30 seconds on my clock. Go ahead. All right, time's up. Now let's compare notes. Here's three things you can control when you're meeting with a prospect. You can control how you present yourself. That is, physically, your demeanor, your dress, your attire, and so on. You can also control your value proposition and what you explain to that prospect about how you can improve his or her condition. You can also control when you're going to talk again by giving options and finding ways to do that meet your schedule. You know, a lot of people complain, oh, I have to cancel something, they can only talk on Thursday. Well, that's not true. And the problem is, and we'll talk more about this in a few minutes, we tend to surrender control. Now, what things can you influence? Well, you can influence how you and the buyer proceed in the conversation. I mean, the buyer might have questions that you can't imagine. The buyer might be inadvertently interrupted through no fault of his or her own. But you can influence things by trying to set up a meeting that's private, and you can influence things by returning quickly to the topic. In terms of things you can't control the client's competitors. You can't control what the client is using at the moment for fixed and sunk cost technology. And you can't control the buyer's behavioral dispositions. And so there's a range here. And my message to you is that we tend to give up control. We tend to think we have less control than we do. Now, why is this? It's because there are arbitrary rules. You know, we're always facing the don't walk sign, even when there's no traffic in sight for 3 miles. We're facing don't do this and don't do that. Government rules and regulations, restaurant rules and regulations, theater rules and regulations. And so we tend to surrender control. Now, I don't know about you, but before the age of unisex restrooms and so forth, women had a tough time in New York theaters because there wasn't enough bathroom space. And so they had these long, winding lines. And then somebody had the bright idea of turning these restrooms into unisex. Oh, fair enough. And I've even found that some women, I don't blame them, would simply use the men's restroom and have some other women, you know, stand guard for them. Sometimes you have to break rules that make no sense or ridiculous inconvenience. You can take more control than you think. You can't control the weather per se, but you can control what you do about the weather. You can move something from outdoors to indoors if you plan for it in advance. You can change your insurance carrier. You can change the way that your kids are educated by changing their schools. And so we have more control than we think. But what happens? We tend to change our vacation plans. We tend to change our day off. We tend to change our plans because somebody imposes on us. We're made to feel guilty. We're made to feel subservient or subordinate. And one of the issues that you have to think about is that control should not rest in wealth. In other words, just because you're sitting in somebody's office 40 levels above the street, and they've got a $25 million budget and 300 people working for them, doesn't mean that they give you orders. It doesn't mean they tell you how to consult or coach. It doesn't mean they demand when you show up again. It doesn't even mean if they hire you, how many days they dictate you be in sight. My response is, as much as I need to be. But we tend to turn into their subordinates. We tend to turn into pseudo-employees because we're afraid to exert our own control. We're afraid we'll lose something. We're afraid we won't be as desirable. Now, there are limits to control. You know, I mean, you could cut a line in a New York City theater to try to get in, but in Manhattan, at least, that is very dangerous. Probably more dangerous than trying to rob a bank. But you can get there early and get in line early, or you can, in some theaters, pay a few extra bucks and you go through a side entrance to a VIP room. You get in early, there's a private security, and of course, if you're pre-clear on TSA for that matter, you can skip the laborious airline security clearance where we're all guilty till proved innocent, and you don't have to take your shoes off and give a blood sample and so forth. Right now, by the way, they're experimenting in at least one airport with a virtual TSA agent where you're looking at somebody on a monitor. And as a lot of you know right now, you simply look into a camera and it does a retinal scan. So it depends what you choose to qualify for. It depends how you choose to run your life. And so control has to give when you're sharing things with other people. When you're on the road, if you're smart, you merge when it comes time to merge. You don't try to prove your machismo. Forgive the male reference, I think it's usually males, who try not to let anyone else in line. The best way to get along is to understand other people are in the same position that you are. However, you can exert control when you're treated poorly or treated rudely. And so when somebody ignores you in a line and you say, I was here first, you're exerting appropriate control. I think that most people over-control when they shouldn't try to do that either. In other words, honking your horn in heavy traffic has never helped anyone. Screaming obscenities at another driver in road rage is not going to help you and can hurt you considerably. And the trouble, of course, is some people go through life in life rage. So control is something you shouldn't surrender, and influence is something where you should put more effort into being influential. Now, how do you do that? You become more influential by mastering the language. Words are our tools. Nuance is everything. So when a buyer says to me, we have no budget for that, that's a factual statement. Nobody in the buyer's office and the buyer bothered to put aside $150,000 for some guy named Alan Weiss they never heard of and who happened to be introduced one day. However, when I point out that budget and money are two different things, and the buyer looks at me quizzically and wants to hear what I say next, and I point out that the buyer is responsible for maintaining budgets, except the buyer is also responsible for taking money out of one budget and putting it into another if there's a better return on that investment. I also point out that my fees are usually no higher in a major office building than what they're spending annually to mist the plants in the offices or to plow the parking lot or to overcome costs for spilled coffee. And so if we can use metaphor and analogy and a variety of vocabulary, we can influence proceedings. And that's because language controls discussions. Discussions control relationships, and relationships control business. So right now, we have two of these three things pretty much in our command if we care to use them. The things we control that we don't always appreciate and where we don't always exert control, and our ability to influence when we might have joint control or the other person feels in control. I said to the vice president of Mercedes-Benz North America once when we were talking about a project, and he said to me, let me tell you how you will consult here. And I said, wait a minute, here is the deal. I will not tell you how to make brake pads. You do not tell me how to consult. You've got automotive quality experts dropping out of the ceiling here, but what you don't have is customer service experts. So let's each take our assigned roles. Now, he agreed with that because it made sense to him. And one of the great lessons I learned in terms of exerting more influence is from a fourth grade teacher. When my kids were in a private school, fourth grade, and it was open house. Remember when they had open houses, you know, before teachers refused to come in the evenings? And we sat in these fourth grade seats with our knees up to our chins, and this 24-year-old teacher facing a room full of about 15 or 20 parents, all probably higher educated than she was. She says, here is the deal. If you don't believe what your kids tell you about me, I won't believe what they tell me about you. All in favor? Well, we all raised our hands in about 3 seconds. She exerted tremendously effective influence. She put things in perspective. And there are always two sides to a story. I don't care how right you think you are. So in those final cases where we cannot exert control or cannot exert influence, the best thing to do is to concede it. Right, I can't help it that your opposition has more modern technology than you do. But we can overcome that with more of a high touch component because they have the high tech but low touch. You can have relatively high tech and very high touch. Why don't we talk about that? And that's my message to you too. Control and influence are about high touch. Don't rely on your answering service. Don't rely on AI. Rely on your God-given talent. You can control that, and you can influence others with it. And that is the uncomfortable truth.
You've been listening to The Uncomfortable Truth with Alan Weiss. For free access to Alan's newsletters, audio and video resources, and for information about his global events and coaching communities, please visit alanweiss.com. Thanks for listening. Keep the faith.